This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
Hello, it's another Inch Podcast recorded Wednesday, March 9th, 2011. My name is Joe Gladyszewski. Joined tonight by Mike Eidelbus and Jess Myers. The Inch Podcast is presented by the NCAA West Regional in St. Louis.
Dreams are forged. Character is tested. Teams are united. Champions win here. The road to the championship continues. Don't miss the 2011 NCAA Division I Men's Ice Hockey West Regional, March 25th and 26th. Hosted by the Central Collegiate Hockey Association at the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
All right, playoff season's here. Again, Joe Gladyszewski, Inch Podcast. Pleased to welcome in Mike Eidelbus, Inch columnist, editor extraordinaire. Hi, boss.
Good evening.
How are you?
Or good day part, depending on when you're listening.
Yes.
I'm well.
Good, good.
I'm ashy.
And also, WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. Hi, Jess.
Hi, guys, and greetings from the Central Time Zone. Good to be here.
Way to go. Well, we've teased this a little bit.
So if you're listening to this in the Central Time Zone, it's an hour earlier. I don't know what that means.
I love the time references in recorded media.
We better call the affiliates.
That's right. Tell them we'll be late.
It's like time stamping your YouTube videos.
If you're listening on the West Coast, it'll come on at your normal time.
Yeah.
All right.
After your late local news.
Yeah. All right. Let's. wait, this is starting early. Yeah. Let's get into some discussion here. We're going to try and make this as podcast friendly as we can. And we've done that by publishing the first ever podcast supplement. If you folks are listening on your computers, you can pull this up at our front page there. The Hobie Tracker, coincidentally called Podcast Supplement. Here's the story about this. In this week's first shift, we broke down scoring numbers for North Dakota's Matt Fratton. Into three categories. We looked at his numbers against the top six other teams, top seven overall, but they didn't play North Dakota since they are that team. Points per game in games against those teams, his points per game against the bottom five teams in the WCHA, those 8th to 12th place teams, and then against non-league teams. And one of the things that stood out was a pretty big split between what he's done against the other top six, which was 15 games and 10 points, about 2 points every three games. And then against the bottom of the league, it was over 2 points per game. And then in non-league play, 8 points in seven games, so about a point a game in those. In those categories, the immediate reaction is, well, yeah, of course, you're going to score more against the weaker teams than against the stronger teams. And it was also mentioned that it would be fair if we compared some of the other candidates, Hobie candidates and other top WCHA player candidates. So we went ahead and did that, and that data is presented in our latest Hobie Tracker podcast supplement. And guys, let's get into this. The most direct, I guess, and fair comparisons are against the other WCHA guys, since, you know, they're in the same league. And we looked at the top five scorers other than Fratton in that league, all of whom had 43 points or more overall. That was kind of the cutoff point we used. Picked out these comparisons before we knew the data, and went over it today, earlier Wednesday. And there it is to present. First, I guess let's start with the Minnesota Duluth guys. Jack Conley, Mike Conley, Justin Fontaine. and you see the splits there. Those guys really made hay outside of the league against a not the strongest non-league schedule, but inside the league, all three were over a point a game in, you know, against the upper echelon WCHA teams. Boss, I guess your thoughts on that for starters.
Well, something that immediately came to mind when you see this data is, you know, you notice that against the top six teams in the league, other than themselves, obviously, you notice that they're at better than a point per game. But then you think, well, sure, but they've got each other to play off of, you know. So how does that factor into their numbers? But still, I mean, it's interesting to note how all three of them are better than a point per game against that upper echelon of the WCHA, and two of the three are below a point per game against the 8th through 12th place teams. So yeah, on the one hand, it, you know, you certainly have to think that they do get a boost from playing on the same line or on the same power play unit. But I guess the argument on the other side of that is, well, why doesn't that translate to when they're playing the 8th to 12th place teams?
Yeah, they you know, if you look at this data, and I guess what it shows is they've been pretty good against the best opponents on their schedule. So
the one that really jumps out at me, you know, and I'm glad you pointed this out, Gladie, in your research, but Justin Schultz, you know, from the blue line.
Yeah, we'll get to those guys. Let's go ahead. Yeah.
We're talking about the UMD
right
guys
now. Yeah.
Yeah, but Justin Schultz's numbers really popped out at me. And especially, you know, we've talked about this all year, but Wisconsin has had the reputation of a team that cannot play against the top teams. You know, their record against teams above 500 has not been good. You look at it, it's not for lack of effort from their blue line, because Schultz's numbers, again, really popped out at me. You know, a little under a point per game in 16 games against those teams is pretty impressive when you're doing it from the backside.
Yeah, and I've got the breakdowns here specifically. If there's a guy who's going to look forward to a Big Ten hockey conference that he won't ever play in, 6 of those 14 points came against Minnesota, and he also had a huge weekend in the showcase. I'm pretty sure 5 points against Michigan and Michigan State. So the non-leaguers we kind of grouped all together. Again, this isn't. The other thing is, and that's kind of why we separated out the WCHA comparisons from the non-league comparisons, and we'll get to that momentarily, but this isn't meant to be an argument comparing whether 3 points against Providence is the same as, you know, 2 points against Minnesota State or, you know, Michigan State or Miami, or whoever, however you want to, you know, we're not going to get an argument about that kind of stuff, but just kind of divided them into top teams in your league, bottom teams in your league, and then non-league opponents. And, you know, your non-league schedules for most of these guys have a good balance of some games against really good teams and some games against not as good teams. But, you know, this is a pretty basic thing. We're not going to get into a huge statistical argument. Bus, what do you see with Drew Shore's numbers here in Denver?
Very similar to what you see with the UMD guys. You know, Shore is averaging almost a point and a half per game against the upper echelon of the WCHA, exactly a point per game against the 8th through 12th place teams, and then against the in the non-league play, a point and a half per game. And Denver played I would say a fairly average non-league schedule. They played Vermont, they played BC, Lake Superior State, and Air Force. Not a bad non-league schedule. But once again, you're talking about a guy who really put up his best numbers against the teams that were that were in the top half of the league standings. And again, I mean, this is not to say that just because of that, that player A is better than player B or vice versa. It's just a very interesting comparison to see, you know, where these guys scored their points. I'm surprised to see, you know, especially in the case of Denver, you know, you look at those teams that they played. I don't think they played Omaha at home. I think that was just a road series. Duluth, I'm pretty sure they didn't play Minnesota, the Gophers in Denver. And I think that was just two games.
Yeah.
I know that obviously they played Colorado four times. Jess, did Denver and Duluth play four times or twice?
I think they only played twice.
That was two games.
That was the final series at the old deck was against Denver. It was a split. So that was just two times. And I know they only played Minnesota twice, and it was at Minnesota. And yep. The reason I know that, and I love this stat, the Gophers have not gotten on a plane this season.
Huh.
They had just one of those favorable schedules where most of their games were either inside the state, and they I don't believe – no, wait, maybe they went to Colorado College.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they had one plane trip. I'm sorry, I misspoke. But didn't go to Denver, didn't go to Alaska, and had an early trip to CC. And if things break right for them, they could go all the way to the Frozen Four without getting on a plane.
But the other thing, I mean, now when you take that into account, I think Denver didn't play. I think they only played North Dakota at North Dakota.
Let's get this.
I'll look that up.
Yeah, they were at North Dakota for two games.
So they played at North Dakota. They played at Omaha.
Yes.
And Omaha didn't come
and
to Denver.
At Minnesota. Yeah, those were all two-game series.
At Duluth, right. And at Minnesota.
Yeah, so the top four teams in the league.
They played them all, and he averaged almost a point, you know, 1.4 points per game. A touch over that. It's pretty impressive when you think about it that way, that, you know, that many you know, at least 10 of those games were on the road, and they played Wisconsin, I think, in Denver.
Yeah, well, that is true.
So 10 of the 14 games were on the road.
I got some funny reactions because I put Drew Shore on my first team all WCHA, and now I feel much better about it. So
there you go, Jess.
Again, good work crunching those numbers, Gladdy.
Yeah. You got it. You got it. All right, let's move down to the bottom of this chart here and grab the next four names. That we've seen in our Hobie Tracker, as it were, the Trackler, starting with Cam Atkinson. His numbers, to me, speak the most in terms of consistency. This is Cam Atkinson at Boston College. Chase Palacek, I guess, has similar numbers, but you look at Atkinson against those top four teams in Hockey East, and, you know, you can debate the merits of the bottom of the league, but I think this is a pretty strong group when you look at New Hampshire, BU, Merrimack, and Maine of what they've done this year. And that's a 13-game sample size and 18 points. And then against the next five teams in Hockey East, 20 points in 16 games, which is actually a lower points per game than against the better teams. And then against a pretty good non-league schedule, only five games there, but 9 points. For him, and you know, four of those for Atkinson came in the two games against Denver. So his splits here are the most balanced of any of the candidates, and Palacek from Rensselaer, same way, against Union, Yale, Dartmouth, and Cornell, the top four teams in ECAC hockey. 1.4 points per game against the 6th to 12th place teams, 1.17, and then against the non-leaguers, and they play a lot of non-league games, you know, 1.36 points per game there. And, then, you know, some of those are against, you know, the likes of Alabama, Huntsville, and Bentley, and, you know, Bowling Green, but there's also a game against BU in there, there's a game against RIT, and a game against Colorado College. So he's had a balanced year, unfortunately a year that might be over right now. Mm-hmm. The most similar comparison to Fratton turns out to be Andy Mealy. A lot of people have talked about him this year. He's made his hay against the bottom of the CCHA, over 2 points a game there in 16 games. But you look at him against the top teams, he's also, 1.6 points per game in those games. That's Michigan, Notre Dame, Western Michigan, and Ferris State. So a nice year for Mealy, and when you have 61 points, you're going to have to get him against everybody. You don't get that total just against a couple of teams.
Yeah, it's an interesting breakdown, and I think Gladdy, you'd probably be the better person to explain how this whole thing came about.
Because
I'm not 100% sure what the genesis was. I have a pretty good idea, but
well, it was a lot of things we saw in terms of the Fratton candidacy. For Hobie and some of the questions, actually, we got a lot of questions about it in our ESPN chat.
Yeah.
And the mindset was Matt Fratton's the best player against the toughest schedule because North Dakota's team schedule and strength of schedule was rated first throughout the year. People went on to carry that definition to be we've played against teams under consideration. Determined as such by pairwise criteria. Well, that's 30 teams or more at any given time. Robert Morris has since fallen out of that category, so those are two more games that Fratton would not have played right now against a team under consideration. And, you know, there was the Michigan Tech series, and then there's two more against Michigan Tech, at least two more coming up this weekend. So it was kind of... you get these general statements of Fratton's been the strongest player against the strongest schedule, and I was just kind of curious to see, well, just how good was he against the really good teams, and how was he against some of the other teams that, you know, may be teams under consideration but might not be truly considered the strongest teams in the country. So
exactly, and I think that's kind of the
pardon me.
The ultimate kind of the bottom line when you look at this breakdown is that, you know, when you're saying you have to be very careful with your definition of what constitutes a quality opponent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, team under consideration, you're talking 30, 31, and 32. I think it may have gone even as deep as 33 at some points in the season. Well, you know what? That's more than half of the teams playing Division I hockey.
Yeah.
You know, when you get down to the bottom, I think that that using the teams under consideration as a criteria for a quality opponent is just way too broad of a definition. And what is a team under consideration?
RPI of 500 or better.
Okay. And what is that?
Yeah, there you go.
So.
I thought RPI finished way above 500. No, forget it.
Barely. Bemidji State has also fallen off of that, out of that criteria, so.
Yeah. So you might have to, again, it's not a fact of right or wrong or pointing fingers or, you know, negating somebody's candidacy. I mean, heck, Matt Fratton leads the nation in goals. And as a Hobie voter, I put a lot of stock in guys that score goals.
Yeah, we always have. And as we've always said, this isn't a Fratton smear job. I know some people will probably feel that way, but... You know, we put him in our Hobie tracker last week on our big board, ahead of Atkinson, ahead of Polacek.
This will be taken the wrong way, I guarantee it.
Well,
I've got history to fall back on there, too, because I remember it would have been 2007. We did a similar kind of breakdown on Ryan Patolny when he was being touted as a Hobie candidate. And he was a top 10 finalist that year. But, found out that a majority of his numbers had come against you know, the Michigan Techs and the Minnesota State Mankatos and those teams of the world who were in, you know, the lower part of the WCHA that year. And boy, I remember hearing about it at Mariucci Arena after that, that boy, we were anti-Gopher and all that. And it's too bad because it's really not that. It's just a fair look at numbers, I think.
Yeah, we presented the data. We presented the data for all the guys. And that's what the numbers showed. It's not a statement or anything. Again, you know, even with these splits and you look at it, you know, if I was a voter, you know, you get to the final 10 guys and then you vote on five. You know, right now I would have Fratton in my top five
if I
was a voter. That's not what these numbers are about.
No.
But they exist and we wanted to present them. So there
you go. Get the facts straight and then distort them as you please.
There you go.
We're getting facts straight.
We're just presenting some facts.
Yes. Some facts. A different way of looking at them.
Yep. So, we did that for all those guys, including Fratton, 10 guys there to look at. One defenseman. But, there you go. Anything else on this, Jess?
Bus? No, I think we're covered it.
All right. So there you go. Little statistical breakdown. Again, if you want to dig into this, if you're listening on your iPod while you're on the treadmill or something, Hobie Tracker podcast supplement this week.
Make sure you give out James Dowd's cell phone number so people can call with complaints.
Yes, you can contact James Dowd, a late scratch from the podcast. We are reporting that as a we're not commenting on that.
No.
We'll get Pierre between the benches and see if he can find something out before the deterioration. All right, we've talked about the individual stuff. Let's talk about some team stuff. Conference tournaments. Three are already underway. Two are about to get underway this weekend. Bus, let's start, I guess, with Atlantic Hockey, because we usually don't, and because there's something to talk about there. Last week we commented a little bit on the disjointed schedule of that and playoff format that the league was divided into. Basically geographic pods for those first-round games, which are just single elimination games. Little did they expect, I'm sure, all four road teams advanced out of those games. And two of the upset victims were two pretty good teams in Robert Morris and Niagara that probably had designs on winning this whole thing and realistically could. That hope is no longer as they are bounced. And now the four teams that had the week off, that's not actually even true because of UConn, but for Holy Cross, RIT, and Air Force, they've got a pretty good road here, home ice series against some of the lower placed teams in that division, or that league.
And I think the interesting thing to note in this tournament, the first round, and you know, yeah, it was a single game, which some people are going to say they're, you know, sure, I guess they're more prone to having upsets in a single game format for that opening round, but it's not that the lower seeded teams won, it's that they won handily. I mean.
Yeah, 5-2, 6-3.
There were three 6-3 games and a 5-1.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you look at a team like Sacred Heart, who's given up a billion goals this season. Not quite a billion, but, you know, you get the idea.
If you round up to the nearest billion, it's a billion.
Well, they've given up closer to 200 than 100. Let's just put it that way. I'm not sure the exact number. It's over 150, I think. But, you know, they score five goals in the third period of their game at Bentley, and they win 6-3. You know, American International had, you know, 8 wins on the season, and 7 of them were in the league, and another team that gives up a lot of goals. You know, they score 6 on Army, at Army, and win. Mercyhurst, you know, Robert Morris is a pretty darn good club. You know, they came in with 18 wins, playing at home, sellout crowd, lose 5-1.
Yeah, that's a tough bounce, though. I mean, Robert Morris is a 5th overall and Mercyhurst 7th overall in that league.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's more like that's more like a series you'd expect this weekend, a quarterfinal.
Right, and Mercyhurst can score some goals. I mean,
yeah, they scored 126 this year. That's most of all those teams. Wow. Including that playoff game, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, as it stands right now, they're the highest scoring team in the league. So, yeah. I mean, that of all the upsets, that's the least surprising. And, you know, they've got a decent, Mercyhurst's got a decent goalie, too, in Zapolsky. Probably, you know, he hasn't played maybe as good as he was toward the end of last season, but still, I mean, he's a guy that's certainly very capable. And then you go to Niagara. I think of the four, this one surprised me the most.
Yes.
You know, Canisius, you know, not just that and I know that there's a rivalry of proximity between these two teams, but, you know, Niagara gives up 4 goals in the second period, and, you know, basically it's game over at that point.
Yeah. So your matchups for this weekend in Atlantic Hockey, and be sure to check in on Ken McMillan's always outstanding Atlantic Hockey coverage at the site on Friday. Your playoff matchups are Sacred Heart at Air Force, American International at RIT, Canisius goes to Holy Cross, and Mercyhurst goes to UConn. UConn would have traveled even though they had to buy had Niagara or Robert Morris advanced. Now they get a home game because of those lower-seeded teams advanced. So
it's American International is the 12. They're going to number 1, RIT.
Yep.
Air Force is 2, and they get number 11, Sacred Heart.
Yep.
And it's 10th. Canisius was 10th, right?
No, Canisius was 8th.
8th against Holy Cross, which was 3. And number 6, Connecticut, gets number 7, Mercyhurst.
Yeah. Well, that's how it is in the WCHA, right, Jess?
Six versus seven.
Let's go. Let's say 12-11 and 11-2. So
CC versus Wisconsin, 6-7.
Yep. So let's get into that a little bit, Jess. I guess the simple question is, which one of the home ice teams is least likely to advance?
Wow, that's a tough one. You know, if Denver were playing anyone but Minnesota State right about now, I think Denver would be ripe for an upset, because that's a team that's been just kind of off a little bit in the last couple weeks. But I don't see Minnesota State being able to put enough together, especially on the road. You know, this is a team that just got swept at home by Alaska Anchorage. And, you know, take nothing away from Anchorage. I've said all year they are the hardest working team in the WCHA and maybe in college hockey. So that's one place I'd normally look for an upset bid, but not this time. That 6-7 matchup intrigues me. Colorado College and Wisconsin, two, you know, pretty even teams that played an even series last weekend in Madison. Mm-hmm. Now they get to do it all over again at CC. And, you know, that one's really, I think, kind of a toss-up.
With a 6-7, is, you know, you would expect that. And
yep.
They're both good. They're both real good.
And then, you know, the one series everybody's talking about should be great hockey no matter how it pans out. But St. Cloud State and Minnesota Duluth. And, you know, you look at where they finished and you would think it shouldn't be that close, especially with all that offense Minnesota Duluth has that we talked about earlier. But St. Cloud State has played great hockey in the second half. And keep in mind, this is a team that I picked for second in the league, and a lot of people picked them up there. You know, this is a team that was one win away from the Frozen Four last year, and granted, had a lot of losses off that team, but they're a very dangerous team. Add to that the fact that they just made a trip to Amsoil Arena a couple weeks ago and scored 8 goals in one of those games. Yep. So that's a team with a lot of confidence. I'm not ready to pick an upset, but I would almost guarantee we will have a Sunday night game in that series.
Yeah. And if you look at form, you know, since Christmas, St. Cloud State looks like, see, there were five games under. Now they're one game, you know, they're four games over 500, and Minnesota Duluth was eight over, and now they're 11 over. So, yeah, they're about the same in second half form.
Yep.
Without breaking down who they beat and who they lost to. But, you know, those teams are that's going to be a good series to watch for sure.
I think the other interesting thing to keep an eye on in the WCHA is Bemidji and Nebraska-Omaha.
The new guys.
Bemidji had so much – yeah, the new guys. Just because Bemidji had so much success – against the Mavericks in the regular season, they were 3-0 and 1. I think maybe shut them out a couple of times. At least once, I know. Theoretically, you look, and I think UNO is the 3 seed and Bemidji's the 10 seed. But I watched parts of that game, the games last week, and Bemidji looked pretty darn good.
The Beavers. The Beavers won 3-1 and 3-0 at home against the Mavs.
Yeah,
that was in
around
Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Wow.
And then in January they went to Omaha. They tied 2-2 and they won 3-2. So, yep. So the Beavers are got to feel some confidence going back to Omaha.
Any news, Jess, that you've heard about Matt Reed? I know he didn't play the second night against the Gophers last week.
Have not heard his status. I would think he would make the trip there, and if there's any chance at all of getting him in the lineup, they would bring him because obviously a key cog offensively for that Beavers team. And, you know, you mentioned the newbies playing each other. The great thing some people pointed out about that, one of the new teams is going to be in the Final Five, so that'll be a nice feather in the cap for one of those programs in their first year in the WCHA that they will make a trip to St. Paul. Somebody will, anyway.
There you go.
Yeah, good. That is good.
Good thing for them. And keep in mind, the Beavers, in their first trip to to the Twin Cities this year, won the Dodge Holiday Classic in Minneapolis. So they
Titletown.
That's right, Titletown.
They beat Buses Mighty Dutch.
Yep. That's right. They did.
Knocked off the feisty Ferris State Bulldogs in the first round and then took out the Dutchman on New Year's Day.
Those predetermined matchup tournaments, I still feel a little weird about handing out trophies at those things.
Yeah, yeah. I do too. Just play the games.
But, hey, you know, that's what they did. They played the games. So, good job. Good job, Bemidji State Beavers.
And I'm interested to see Minnesota again. I bet, you know, I've been paying a little bit more attention to them over the last month because they're playing a heck of a lot better.
Yeah.
I still think they've got some question marks.
Well, what we've seen in the last couple weeks, a couple things. Number one, Nick Bjugstad is emerging to be the kind of player that he's going to be. I mean, he's just an immense talent. He's got size. He's got wheels. He handles the puck well, and all of that's coming to the forefront. The other thing, especially in the second half of the season, we've seen, and this is why this player is on my first team all tournament ballot, despite the fact that he's on a fifth place team. Kent Patterson has given them a solid showing and goal, which they haven't had for a long time, which is, you know, that kind of confidence is allowing them to do a lot more things. And, you know, you take a key player like Jay Baribault out of their lineup offensively, and still they've gone seven games without a loss now, have secured home ice, and you know, they're a tough team.
Yeah, I was going to ask you actually a little bit about that, Jess. Give you a forum here. There's been a lot of talk on the old internet about all WCHA ballots were due this week, and many media members, writers, broadcasters have posted their selections, and of course, every ballot was biased against every other team.
Right,
because
exactly.
That's how it is in college hockey. Anything you wanted to explain or reveal? I mean, I know in our end of the season inch notebooks, we'll reveal our first team selections. I trust those will mirror what you voted on.
You know, this was
your picks, but
this was a tough year, a really tough year to pick an MVP of the league. Not only because the pool is deep. I mean, there's a lot of really good talent there, as we've explained, you know, in the first segment, when you look at the numbers of some of these guys have put up in big games. That's part of it. The second part of it is, you know, when you're trying to pick an MVP and it's close, you always say, well, what did this player mean to his team, or what would this team have done without this player? Okay, and now, please don't make this, again, like I'm picking on Matt Fratton, but apply that argument there, okay? You say, what would North Dakota have done without player X? Well, they took Danny Christo out of the lineup. They took Jay Ganaway out of the lineup and still just completely stormed to the WCHA title. So how do you place that much value on any individual player on a team that's deep, that's that deep? And, I mean, that made things very tough to figure out where the likes of Matt Fratton and Gregoire and, you know, some of these just immensely talented, you know, Ganaway, one of them, players on this North Dakota team, how do they fit into the bigger picture of the WCHA? That was the big challenge for me.
I was surprised in your ballot did not include Gregoire, correct?
It did not.
On any of the three teams?
No, it did not.
Did it include Matt Reed?
No, did not.
Come on, man.
You're biased against
good players.
teams that wear green. I didn't have any Seawolves on there either.
Those teams that play in the woods.
Those are my guys.
No, I mean, and there were some tough choices. I mean, you know, a guy like Zucker obviously had an outstanding freshman season. On the flip side of that, what do you do with Jaden Schwartz, you know, who is an immense talent, but he missed half the year? I mean, where do you fit him in? I mean, that was another big challenge for me.
Yeah, so. I'm actually quite interested to see how that turns out, because I don't think, and you've seen these guys more than I have, Jess, but I don't think there's any question that that Schwartz is the most talented freshman in the WCHA.
Yep.
I mean, he's outstanding. Zucker's very good too. But I guess I would have to believe that for that the very reason that you mentioned, that Zucker's going to going to be the rookie of the year, even though I think had Schwartz played the entire year, he probably would have ended up walking away with it.
And I mean, you know, that's the thing you can't control about injuries. I mean, Che Ganaway, I think, is the MVP of the league last year if he plays a whole season. But guys miss significant time, and you have to adjust accordingly.
Well, the other thing too that, or another thing that keeps coming up for me at least with the WCHA is, what do you do with Aaron Dell?
Right.
I mean,
the classic case of a good goalie on a good team.
But I mean. And I think we talked about this a little bit in the last podcast, or you know, at least one of the recent ones. We all saw what North Dakota's goaltending looked like before he emerged as the number one guy.
Right.
I mean, they were coming back from that that terrible series they had at Maine. I mean, they were really at a crossroads. You know, where the season could go in one of two directions, depending on the kind of goaltending play that they got. They put Dell in as the starter, and you know, he stabilized that position for him.
Right.
You know, I'm not so sure that he's not the MVP of that league.
Interesting.
It's different. It depends on the title that you're voting for. If you're voting for most outstanding player or player of the year, or you're voting for most valuable player.
Yep.
So.
Tough call.
Yeah, that's kind of the stuff there. I would have had Gregoire and Reed very high on my ballot had I been blessed enough to be a part of the WCHA ballot.
I had, in the interest of full disclosure, I had Aaron Dell on my third team, behind Kent Patterson and Faulkner from Nebraska-Omaha.
Yeah. I think you can. I think you can make many of the same arguments for Patterson too.
Oh sure. Yeah.
I think I did just a couple minutes ago. I don't know if you guys were listening.
Yeah. No, yeah. Sure. On a team that probably needed goaltending stability more than North Dakota did.
Right.
I mean, because North Dakota was going to score goals.
Yeah, Minnesota was probably not a team and still is probably not a team that's going to outscore a lot of teams. You're going to need your goaltending to be rock solid, and you're going to need to score three, and then hopefully good things will come to you. Talking about playoff series, by the way, that's another one I'll pick for three games. I think Alaska Anchorage, with how hard they work and the fact that they came into Minneapolis just a couple weeks ago and won a game, I could see some Sunday night hockey at Mariucci Arena.
You really could.
I really could.
it's right down the road.
And keep in mind, too, Anchorage is coming off a road sweep in Mankato. They scored eight goals last weekend. I mean, this is a team that may be coming together at just the right time.
All right. Can we get a segue here? I suppose they're not segues if we announce them. a lot of things you're saying, Jess, about these WCHA, I'm seeing some similarity in ECAC hockey. First point was St. Cloud was a highly thought-of team before the season started, and even though a lot of the year didn't go the way we expected, you know, there's still enough there to believe in, and, you know, we've seen that over the last couple months. Colgate kind of fits that mold in ECAC hockey. I mean, they finished 12th. Some people had them, you know, they got first place votes in the media poll, and I think ended up fourth and fifth between the media and coaches preseason polls. So there was enough there to believe in about this Colgate team. It's just things didn't go their way. They lost maybe 14 or 15 one-goal games, and then kind of got hot that last month. Kept believing. That was, you know, a belief and a hope to keep that optimism going when things weren't going their way. And then they went to a highly thought of Rensselaer team and beat the Engineers in a three-game series. So Colgate kind of fits that mold, and they're going to go to Union this weekend. That's a big ask. Union's really good.
A big what? I'm sorry.
Big ask.
Okay, careful.
Are you calling people names?
You can't say big ask on the podcast.
I think you just did.
Something like that. It's not the magic podcast word. So, you know, you get that.
Two syllables, sounds like.
Starts with. You know, and then you get, you know, the hottest team going, which is Harvard right now. Again, similar to Colgate, they kind of had, didn't have the greatest regular season, but then they put things together and really, really got in a roll, knocked out Clarkson in two games. And they've got, you know, they've got a series against their travel partner, Dartmouth, a Dartmouth team that's good, but maybe, you know, every time you watch Dartmouth, you see some good things, but you kind of, you know, kind of like getting the baked potato and not the steak, you know, like, yeah,
you're left wanting.
That was good, but, you know, is there any more? Dartmouth's a real good team, but Harvard's playing well. I would not, that's my dark horse upset candidate this week is a 10th place Harvard team going against Dartmouth.
Yeah, and there's always one in ECAC hockey.
Yeah, we've seen
there always is.
Yep. And ECAC hockey coaches will say it. People around the nation will roll their eyes, but you know they always talk about the depth of the league. You know, even if you're playing a Quinnipiac or a St. Lawrence or a Harvard or a Colgate, you know, those are good teams. And you kind of see that when playoffs roll around. So you got that going. The other series, St. Lawrence Yale and Quinnipiac Cornell, that will take place this weekend.
You know, I'm just looking at Harvard. There was a point where they had four wins.
Yeah, like in February, there was a point where
they had four wins. February 7th when they lost to Northeastern in the Beanpot first round. And since then, they're 7-1-1.
I know.
So.
Yep.
Take that for what it's worth, but I mean they're playing good hockey.
Yeah, they're coming on for sure.
And they're scoring goals.
That's the big difference. They really just threw out the fancy stuff and said, you know, just get pucks to the net and go to the net. Hey, guess what? It works.
Yeah, turns out.
So.
And their only loss during that stretch was to Colgate, of course.
Yeah, last place Colgate.
There you go.
Yeah. So, which was the night after they won at Cornell, right? So.
Yeah. Yeah, yes.
So, yeah, good stuff there from Harvard. I'd keep an eye on them. I can't see Yale or Union slipping up. I'm sure everyone will write me about this on Monday if it happens, but those teams are just too good and too tough at home, especially. So I'd look at that a little bit. And then the winners, talk about dangling that carrot. You get to go to Atlantic City. So
nice.
A new host site for the ECAC hockey tournament final weekend. So that is pretty good.
That looks like it'll be just worlds of fun.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I hope so anyway. It's a new place and you know, kind of a new market for college hockey, and yeah, good for them.
Yeah, so let's do that. Let's talk more generally now. We're not going to get into the minutiae of every series in Hockey East or the CCHA per se, but one of the things that's come up kind of more general to speak about is playoff formats overall. Should every team make the playoffs in your respective league? That is how it works in four of the conferences. Hockey East, that is not the case. The ninth and 10th place teams are not invited to the playoff party. But, you know, as we saw in Atlantic Hockey and CCHA and ECAC Hockey, the 12th place teams all won their series this past weekend. Pros, cons, start with Bus.
Well, this I think this is obviously something that has an argument that's moved to the forefront just because of, you know, you mentioned the three 12th place teams winning and, you know, the rash of upsets in Atlantic Hockey. Same with in the ECAC a little bit too. But I think what the I think ultimately, and especially you look at the leagues where they have a best of three format in the first rounds, you know, if you're a 5 seed playing a 12 seed or a 6 seed playing a 12 at home, I mean, ultimately, I think the responsibility's got to fall on that higher seed team, and, you know, they just got to take care of business. You know, if you can't win two out of three against the last place team in your league, I think the burden is not on the playoff format. The burden's on the team for not winning.
Bingo.
I mean, what more of an advantage do you want in a best of three series? You get three games at home. You know, you're playing a team, you know, in most cases, and I think we're just talking about the extreme cases here of the fives versus the 12s and that nature, you know, not so much the sevens and eights, because those are, you know, going to be a coin flip regardless. You know, I think in this case, you know, the flaws aren't with the system. The onus ultimately falls on the higher seed team for not doing what they should do.
There you go.
When I started covering college hockey, not when I started, but early in my career of covering college hockey, there were 2 years where the WCHA was a nine-team league. St. Cloud State came on board in 1990 to an eight-team league, making it a nine-team league. And for those 2 years, they did a system in the WCHA where it was an eight-team playoff, meaning the ninth place team, end of the regular season, you're done. It just so happened that both of those years it was Denver. Amazingly enough, you look at where the Denver program is now, but at that point, 2 years in a row, they finished ninth in the league, and after their last regular season game, good night, guys, we're through with you. You know, I thought about that now when you go to a 12-team league, and if it didn't make more sense to just have a 10-team playoff like fans were used to, the bottom two teams would have their seasons be done at the end of the regular season. Now, caveat here, never going to happen, because the WCHA collects all the revenue, ticket revenue from the first round series.
There you go.
And they're not going to take away, you know, potentially two or three extra games where you know, if you're at the Kohl Center, that's, you know, potentially 15,000 tickets, which is a good chunk of revenue. So it's not going to happen. But, you know, I'll argue that I don't think that would be such a bad thing. And, you know, this is not to discredit the 11th and 12th place teams. In this case, it would be Minnesota State and Michigan Tech. But I will say this, you know, after what happened to Michigan Tech last weekend on their home ice against North Dakota. I mean, they got beat twice, you know, bad. And now they have to hop on a bus and travel, you know, a time zone away to North Dakota for two or possibly three games that, you know, I don't know that a lot of people hold out hope of an upset there. You know, if you eliminate that, I guess I would have a hard time arguing that that's a bad thing.
Yeah, the 1 versus 12 setup is a little different than these ECAC hockey and CCHA and Atlantic hockey setups where the top four teams have a bye.
Right.
And you're trying to determine the next four teams that they're going to play against. So that does make a little more sense. But, you know, I look at, you know, and we talked about it in First Shift again. We keep coming back to that, I guess. But we've talked about it on the podcast, too. You know, just because these teams are in last place, you know, doesn't mean they're, like, bad people or they're not trying. And even if things haven't gone your way, you know, you got a chance to make a memory and to get better for next year. You know, you can't tell me these Bowling Green kids aren't going to have better off-season workouts. And these coaches are going to hit the recruiting trail, you know, without, you know, with a carrot, you know, a nugget to offer and say, hey, you know what? You know, maybe we did finish 12th, but we went up to Northern Michigan and we came together and we played hard and we won. And then, you know, yeah, we had a chance to play against Michigan at Yost, which is, you know, a great opportunity for any college hockey player, you know. And then a couple wins and we're Joe Louis Arena.
Yeah.
I think the opportunity is there. Jess, you made the realistic and most valid point is it's going to happen because these are all revenue streams for
yep.
the respective leagues.
Yeah.
So you're going to have as many playoff games as you can have.
Now, the classic example of why you have that 1 versus 10 matchup or any of that 93-94 season, Don Lucia's first year at Colorado College, you know, the Tigers come out of nowhere, win the WCHA. And as he said at the time, and my reward for that is I get to play three games against Michigan Tech and Jamie Ram.
Yeah.
And the Huskies upset CC in the first round. And that was the year, the famous year that CC, despite winning the WCHA regular season, did not get an invite to the NCAA tournament. And there were rules changes as a result.
Oh, was that when they added the regular season AQ?
Yep.
Back in that 12-team game?
It was known as the Colorado College rule.
Good deal.
You know, I think I guess I'm playing both sides of the fence here, but I think one argument you can make in favor of maybe not letting everybody in, and it's kind of, I think it kind of gets to something that we talk about quite a bit is maybe it puts a little more value on the regular season if you don't let everybody in. You know, if you've got 8 spots or 10 spots and you've got 12 teams, you know, I think at this point in the season, and this is probably more so for fans and maybe media people than players and coaches and teams, but I think there's a tendency to kind of look beyond the end of the regular season and even look beyond the league playoffs and kind of look at the NCAA tournament and, you know, seeing where my team is bouncing up and down in the pairwise. You know, I think we really, and I think we talked about this last year too around this time of the season, is that we're, you know, really losing, it seems to me at least, we're losing a lot of focus on what's happening on the races at the end of the regular season and even the playoffs to a certain extent, the conference playoffs. I think that because of the focus on the pairwise, and everybody wants to see, you know, everybody's really concerned, or a great number of people are concerned about this jockeying for the NCAA tournament. Kind of lose fact that, hey, there's teams out there winning regular season titles. There's teams out there winning conference titles. There's teams getting upset. You know, and it's a shame, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we've tried to hammer that point home a little bit, and we will continue to do that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's taking. I don't know if it's taking at all.
Well, that's how we like the hockey,
right?
You know, so that's how we are. That's how we'll be, and that's where we stand. Gotta mention Boston College. Two big wins last weekend, home and home against New Hampshire. They got the Hockey East regular season title. This is their time of the year. See what BC brings to the table. Good club, though.
I was shocked to find out in doing, and I think I wrote about it in the forecast for last Friday, that BC hadn't won a league title. You know, they won two national championships.
Yeah.
But they hadn't won a league title in 6 years.
And lost one in that time.
Yeah.
Lost two, Wisconsin and Michigan State.
That's right.
So
they hadn't won the regular season title in the Hockey East since 2005, but you know, it's been to four championship games, so.
Yeah. So, there you go. Anything else before we deteriorate?
Did the Prowlers win tonight, Jess?
I will have to check. They were down after two, but it's the state hockey tournament. Anything can happen, and it always does.
The Minnesota State Hockey Tournament started. Single A's played today. That's the little schools.
Started without my Rams.
Yeah. Well, they would play tomorrow.
Well, but they would also play tomorrow if they had a winning record this year.
Yeah. Tough year for your Rams.
Yeah, well.
Apparently they don't reload.
We were right in it in that, I think I had a third period lead in that that last game.
Wow, I'm looking at the stats here. I don't know if this is a final. But if it is, what a game. Breck ahead of the Prowlers. 4-2 after two periods. The Prowlers with three in the third. And either a lead 5-4 or 1-5-4. If anyone doesn't know, Thief River Falls, Minnesota, home of the other Ralph Engelstad Arena and the hometown of the Ralph Engelstad.
Yep.
TRF Prowlers.
With one of the great nicknames out there, the Prowlers.
Neil Koepke's favorite Minnesota high school hockey team.
I did not know that.
Not so sure about that.
Well, his favorite nickname. He's always like, I want a Prowlers shirt.
Yeah.
Well, there was a guy who scored for H. Hermantown?
Yeah.
Kid for Hermantown named Koepke today scored. Last name Koepke. After the game, he was partying with some Hermantown fans. It's a little shout out for Neil Koepke. You've heard those on the Inch podcast before.
He never listens.
Well, but those who know, they know.
If anyone listening knows Neil Koepke, tell him he's a star.
You don't have to tell him.
You don't have to tell him. He is a star.
He is.
So,
I'm sorry, that is not a final. The Prowlers up now 6-4 with 2:15 to play.
Gotcha.
Wow.
These real-time scores are tremendous on our recorded podcast.
That's right.
We've
had breaking news on a podcast before. We can do whatever we want.
Have we had breaking news on a podcast before?
I think we have.
Oh, no. We had a podcast fail a couple weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, that's
where
right.
Where we had breaking news, but...
Oh, that's
heard
right.
It,
that's...
So,
yeah.
So it never happened.
It never recorded. It ended up in the ether somewhere.
Yes.
It was so good it wouldn't stick... It just couldn't be turned into zeros and ones.
It did have one of the great podcast one-liners of all time.
It did.
We shouldn't recreate that without the...
No.
With James Dowd Scratched. Pierre has just checked in from between the benches. Dowd low body injury, actually. Is what we're hearing.
Will not return?
Will not be part of this podcast. Return. Could return for the next. He's podcast to podcast.
Yeah. He'll come out wearing a full cage like Ryan O'Byrne did last night.
For that lower body injury.
That's right.
All the people in the press box. Huh?
So they keep you guessing.
Exactly.
They make you think.
It is playoff time in college hockey.
Yes. You gotta tape it up.
All right.
Any other deterioration?
Yeah, we had some good ones right there. What else is out there? I have to give credit.
Oh, go ahead.
I have to give credit for the threw out a little Twitter bomb, so to speak, before the podcast recorded, saying, "What sweater should I wear tonight for the podcast?" And loyal podcast listener Fetch checked in, sent a picture of the old school Providence skating friar with the three stripes on the sleeve and on the waist. Said, "You know what? I actually got one of those. I got that club in the bag." So that was the winner. So we got the Providence skating friar sweater on here.
Nice.
As recommended. Doing it for the fans.
Yeah.
Customer Appreciation Day. Another late entry was I should wear the business suit, as they call it. The black Sue sweater.
Ooh.
I do not have that club in the bag.
The business suit. Nice. Well, buy it now, because collector's item.
Could be.
Could be.
I've got an old Sue jersey from, like, the 80s with the
Indiana. The Blackhawks?
With the World logo on it?
Yeah. Exactly. That I bought, Jess, that I bought at Shields in St. Cloud.
Nice. Nice. You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I was at a Minnesota Wild Chicago Blackhawks game a week ago, maybe. And, you know, around this time of year, every club comes out with their St. Patrick's Day collection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, if you're the Minnesota Wild, it just looks dumb because you wear green anyway. But there's a fan walking into the XL Energy Center wearing a Blackhawks St. Patrick's Day jersey. It's green. It's got the Blackhawk head on the front, and it says Jonathan Toews' name on the back and number. I thought, okay, it's an old school Sue sweater. It looked exactly the same as what they used to wear.
There you go. It
said Iwabuchi on the back.
That's right. Bob Iwabuchi. Jim Archibald.
For my...
The hated Jim Archibald.
Yeah. For my Roseau people on the podcast, in the podcast studio audience. What?
Is this recorded before a live studio audience?
They stay so quiet.
Here's my...
Our applause light burned out.
All the applause the Inch Podcast has garnered over the years. Here's my goal. I'm going to the Frozen Four. I'm coming out to the great state of Minnesota, the state of hockey, as it were. And I want to come back from Minnesota here to lovely upstate New York with some kind of Roseau gear. Whether that's a sweater or a ball cap or a t-shirt or something. I need a Roseau hockey something to add to my collection. So any Roseau people who can maybe help me out, hit me on Twitter, inch_Gladdy. And as they say, any friend of my Rams is a friend of mine.
I've got an old Roseau jersey, but I'm not giving it up. You wouldn't wear it anyway.
No.
You're damn right I wouldn't wear it. I'm a Roseau man.
You'd wear it upside down.
That's right.
Where is a diaper, maybe?
saddest thing about the Roseau jersey I have, and I think you guys have seen me wearing it. It was from my junior year of high school when I was a JV backup goalie for the Warriors. Keep in mind, used to wear this jersey with full goalie pads underneath it.
That doesn't fit anymore.
Put it on with a t-shirt on under it now, and it's tight.
Oh, yeah.
Nice and snug.
Goalie cut.
That's right. It was a big bulge from the fight strap in the back. Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a call out to my Roseau people.
Roseau's a long way from St. Paul, you know.
I know where it is. I'm a little dummy.
Well, I know that.
But there may be some Roseau-type people going to the Frozen Four.
Roseau-type people?
Other than you, you mean?
Yes, other than me. My Rams. Anything else?
Jess, do you know anybody in Roseau?
Oh, I got people everywhere. I got a few face friends in Roseau.
Yeah, hit up Inch Gladdy on Twitter. We'll see what we can do.
All right. We will come through for you one way or another.
All right. So, yeah, that's my goal for the Frozen Four. And maybe to write an article about hockey.
I'm not going to go with an open plea.
Good idea.
I used to have a very nice Edina sweatshirt. I don't know whatever happened to it.
Oh, wow.
It wouldn't. Not a sweater. Not a jersey.
Sweatshirt. Hornets.
It was still very nice. I used to have a Jefferson one, too. I wonder what happened to that.
Jefferson was a classic look, that University of Maine with the dark blue and the light blue.
Yeah. Can't go wrong with that color scheme.
No. That's good stuff.
Maine Merrimack this weekend.
How about Maine, by the way? We haven't talked about folks. But that's a emerging team, an emerging story.
Yeah. Yeah, they were about 5.5 feet under. And then they said, not so fast, my friend.
And playing Merrimack, too, some bad memories for the Warriors, some recent bad memories.
Maine put it on them pretty good 2 weeks ago.
Well, DaCosta's back.
Yes. He's a difference maker.
Yeah, I would say so.
So, and Nyquist has been better lately. So,
yes.
That's on Nesson Friday night for sure. So if you get the fancy cable or satellite transmission of New England Sports Network, home network of Inch Stafford, Jeff Howe, former and returning.
And returning.
Inch Stafford. Yeah. Rook Howe, so.
I was reading on another website, by the way, college hockey coach lost his job and then got it back today, so that was good.
Yeah, how about that?
And then may lose it again. We don't know. That's the elusive nature of college hockey.
You usually have to put a search committee together for those things.
Wasn't it right. Bruce Pearl?
Jim Tressel?
They just suspended him for a practice.
Well, we'll see.
Is Bruce Pearl the Tennessee coach?
Basketball.
Yeah. Anybody who would wear an orange sport coat deserves a suspension.
This from the fashion-forward mind of Jess Myers.
That's correct. With my skin-tight Waro jersey.
And your $9 Colorado Buffalo coat.
Forgot my jacket. What can I say? Still wear that bad boy.
Well, yeah. We're in the mountains.
See, yet another reason why we got to go back to Denver soon.
What, do you need a new coat?
Yes.
Let's open for some Louisiana Lafayette this time. All right, last call, shout outs. Jess?
I got nothing. Best of luck to everybody this weekend. Playoff time. Let's have some fun.
Gladdy, what are you giving up for Lent?
My NBA fantasy league. That's one thing I'm giving up. Among others. So. But yeah, that's going to be the one that really hurts me.
Yeah.
The biggest sacrifice I'm going to make. And NFL. I'm giving up the NFL.
NFL may be giving up you.
You know how it treats its fans. It's diehard fans like myself.
You're a diehard fan of about 8 teams, so.
We are nasty. All right. I guess that'll do it. Another Inch podcast. Presenting sponsor of the Inch podcast is the NCAA and the Frozen Four.
Dreams are forged. Character is tested. Teams are united. Champions win here. Watch the crowning of a new NCAA Men's Frozen Four champion April 7th and 9th on ESPN and ESPN2 in high definition. For information, visit ncaa.com/frozen4.
All right, wanted to get a late-breaking score in here before we close. It's like the back talk, you know, when they pan out from the Sports Center or something. Thief River Falls Prowlers, 7-5 winners over Breck School, right?
Yes.
Yay! There's our studio audience.
Hey, there we go. Thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast. Be sure to check us out for all the conference tournament preview and end-of-the-season notebooks this week.